Good morning. You're listening to Voices from the Prison Action Network, produced by the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center. I'm Judith, and on the phones with us, we have Rachel Muirpool, who argued an appeal in the case of Walton versus New York State Department of Correctional Services in New York State Supreme Court, the appellate division of the Third Judicial Department, on Monday. And we have Ivy Walton also on the line, and she's the lead plaintiff in the suit. Good morning, Rachel and Ivy.
Good morning.
Okay, you're both on. And I'm so pleased. I appreciate your coming on so early in the morning. Rachel, could you just tell us what took place on Monday?
Sure. Well, on Monday, I argued an appeal before the Third Department up in Albany. Now, basically, we've brought this lawsuit to challenge what we claim is an unauthorized and discriminatory tax, which is being levied on the family members, friends, and lawyers of prisoners in New York State to fund general prison services. We think it's unfair that the family members of prisoners are being forced to pay outrageous prices to accept the telephone calls of their loved ones simply as a means for the state to raise money. So our case was dismissed in the lower court on statute of limitations grounds. Basically, the judge there said that we should have filed it immediately after the contract between the Department of Correctional Services and MCI, which set out this kickback structure, was filed. And we were there to claim that, to argue that, you know, because my client's rights are violated every month because they keep being billed for these unlawful charges, that the court had to hear their case and rule on the legality of the situation.
So how did you feel about what took place?
I think it went well. You know, a couple of the judges seemed receptive to our arguments, and I was very happy also to have Ivy as well as other plaintiffs in the audience. I think it's really important that we showed the court that there are people out here who care about this issue, that we're watching what goes on, and that, you know, that really drives the point home that it's their responsibility to finally get to the merits of our argument, which no court has done yet.
Mm-hmm. I was in the audience, and I was very impressed. I haven't been to many appeals, so maybe this is standard, but by the fact that you asked for 2 minutes for rebuttal, and in which case that allowed you to argue against some of the points that the opposition made.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to do, and in fact, this time, you know, the attorney for the Department of Correctional Services said some things that I think really support our case, in fact. You know, he sort of acknowledged that there was a political reality behind the charges here, and it was, you know, it's a matter that the Department of Correctional Services says they can't raise money to support some of these services, and so if they didn't tax the family members of prisoners, they wouldn't be able to fund these services inside prison, and that's just an outrageous thing to say, considering that most of the money raised by the state is going to pay for health care inside prisons.
Yes, I was very impressed with how you responded very, very concretely to the different points. And when do you find out what the decision is?
How long does that take? I wish I knew. You know, it usually takes about 6 weeks to 2 months, I would say, for a decision to come out. It might be a little longer in this case, but hopefully we'll know in a couple months.
And what do you do in the meantime?
Oh, just wait, hope, you know, work on other cases. It's really a waiting game at this point. It's one of the frustrating things about litigation. Of course, there's a lot of other work going on the education and outreach front. You know, I don't know if Ivy wants to talk about some of that maybe, but, you know, there's a lot of other work to this project than just litigation, and that work will continue.
Yeah, I want to ask Ivy about that in a second, but I have one more question for you.
Sure.
What are the possible responses of the court?
Well, there's two main possibilities. The first is that the court could reverse what the lower court did and find that, you know, we did file in a timely manner and recognize that our claims that the the claims we made are legitimate, that we are complaining of conduct that's unlawful. And then they'll send it back to the lower court for a trial. Either if that happens, or if the court upholds what the lower court does and says that, you know, that we filed out of time, either way, probably there'll be an appeal. If we lose, we'll appeal. If the state loses, they'll appeal. So either way, I think it's pretty likely, or I don't know if they would appeal, but it's likely they would appeal. Mm-hmm. So either way, I think it's pretty likely that this case is going to go up to the Court of Appeals to be heard in the highest court of the state of New York.
Okay, so the law grinds slowly.
It sure does.
Oh, Ivy, how long have you been, this is Ivy Walton, the lead plaintiff in this case. How long have you been involved in this, and what other activities have you been involved in around this issue of the telephone charges?
Well, I started out with Fifth Avenue Committee, and I started with them right after my accident, which was in 2000. So I must have started around about somewhere between June of 2000.
Mm. And
that had nothing to do with the campaign. But the way I got involved with them, going up to see my son on a bus, and they were out recruiting, members for, family members for that was having problems with their, with their loved one that was incarcerated, And, of course, I was always interested in trying to find anything that might would be able to help me as far as he was concerned. I need someone, like, for instance, now he's going through some problems up there. He's being harassed by one of the POs up there, And so I always try to sort out any kind of information that I might, that might be of some help to me, to reach out to my son.
How do you get to visit him?
Yes. Yes, I go, I'm a senior citizen on a fixed income, so I can't go as often as I would like. That's why calling is so important, But with us, him and I, since that MCI is so extremely high, we, like, made a pact. We would only call, he would only call, like, if it was extremely urgent. Like now, see, now he had to call me quite often because he needs me to call up there and speak to someone up there about this officer that's harassing him, So, this is why it's important that we be able to communicate by phone. But if it's going to be high that we can't afford it, then that puts us in a hardship, So that's where I stand.
So did you take part in the rally on?
Yes, I'm always, I'm sort of active in a lot of different things. So I'm with the Black Unite rally that Ron Daniels is starting now. I'm also active with Reverend Sharpton. I belong to his group. I belong to CEMOTAP. I belong to so many things. I belong to Automatics group. So, when you got children and when there's different drugs and things on the street, you have to be active because, with them profiling, people of color.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was a call on my...
Oh, okay. Well, it sounds like you're a very active person trying to make changes for the better in your community.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This has been one of them. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the air this morning. We're going to cut it short, and we're going to give a call to Dana Kaplan from the Center for Constitutional Rights and ask her to describe the events of Wednesday a little bit. But I want to give you a chance for any last-minute comments. Is there anything you, if there are concerned people in the amongst our listeners who would like to do something about this, can you give any suggestions for how they could?
I just want to let people know that if they want to keep up to date on the progress of the lawsuit, they can check out CCR's website. The Center for Constitutional Rights has a website in which we include sort of all of the litigation developments, and that address is ccr-ny.org. And I think Dana will be able to give people a better idea of how they can get involved in the campaign as well. So thanks for having us on.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care.
Good morning.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're back, and on the air with us now is Dana Kaplan from the Center for Constitutional Rights. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, I'm interested. I really haven't had a chance to talk to anybody who was in New York City last Wednesday, so can you just tell us what happened and where we're going from here?
Sure. The boycott, march, and rally was wonderful last Wednesday. As folks know, 11 people pledged to boycott the New York State phone systems by signing a petition, by signing one of the web petitions that was circulating. You know, when we spoke to people at the buses, we also had accounts at several New York State facilities. People on the inside were refusing to use the phone system, which is wonderful to hear. And in New York City itself, we had close to 200 people gather outside, near the MCI office on 41st and 6th Avenue, where we marched down 42nd Street in the middle of the rush hour, you know, Midtown Manhattan lunch, to get to Pataki's office at 41st and 3rd Avenue, and deliver Pataki all the petitions that we had, you know, 3,000 signatures from people from the last few years who had said that they were totally opposed to this contract, as well as deliver Pataki a bill for $4 million, which is the amount of money that New York State prison families have spent on MCI and DOCS since the contract was signed. So it was a wonderful event, and, you know, everyone just had great feedback, and we got some tremendous media coverage out of it as well.
Well, it really sounds like the Center for Constitutional Rights is really working very hard.
Absolutely. But I think what was also very exciting about the day was that, you know, obviously the Center for Constitutional Rights had a big role in organizing it, but, you know, there were just so many organizations that came together to make this possible. So Prison Families of New York, we had people coming in from Rochester, Philadelphia, Auburn, Long Island, Albany, Prison Families Community Forum, which is New York City-based, was out there in large numbers. BMCC and Hunter College, City College, Fordham University, all these student campuses came out and, you know, sent student leaders in kind of solidarity with us against MCI. And a lot of different other organizations, you know, Drop the Rock, Unlock the Block, all the other groups doing criminal justice reform. It was really exciting to see that, you know, so many organizations have been working on this. And that really is what gave it that huge power of just numbers and excitement.
Well, that's great. Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, we are having, we're going to have an evaluation meeting to talk about what the immediate next steps are. There have been people who have said that they would like to see this continue, whether it is, you know, a boycott that happens on the 16th of every month, or, you know, every Wednesday is call into Governor Pataki Day. Those are just a couple of proposals on the table, and I think that, you know, we'll try and figure out what's the most effective, but I definitely think that, you know, all the people involved feel like momentum is picking up and that, you know, we can only continue to apply pressure. We will also be having a holiday party in New York City so that, you know, people can kind of celebrate all the hard work that's gone in over the last few months, as well as have some time to write holiday cards to their loved ones. And then in the new year, we'll be kicking it off just as, you know, twice as hard when the legislature is back in session. You know, we're really pressuring the Senate to move this bill out of committee. We're really stepping up the pressure on Governor Pataki, and then, of course, you know, whoever the next governor will be. So
Tell us the name and number of that bill and who people can write if they want to.
It's called the Family Connections Bill. I apologize that offhand I don't know the number, but if you check out our website, www.telephonejustice.org, you can go right to a page and contact your senator, contact your assembly member on this bill. The assembly has already passed it, but they'll have to repass it in the next session. And the Senate, who we're really focusing on, is Senator Nozzolio, because he sponsored this bill, but he has not yet moved it out of his committee. So, you know, if it gets a little complicated for folks to figure out who their exact senator is, it's very easy on the website just to go, you know, fill out the link, and the letter will go right there as well as to Pataki.
And that website again is?
Is www.telephonejustice.org, O-R-G.
Well, thank you very much. It's been very informative. I'm glad to hear about the success of last Wednesday's events.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm fortunate that more people obviously weren't able to come down and make the actual rally. But I know, you know, travel is difficult. Mm-hmm. And so certainly we'll be keeping folks posted of other upcoming events, and definitely other events going on in upstate New York in the coming months as well. So please, you know, folks are interested in getting more involved, definitely contact us via the website.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your being on the show with us this morning.